Welcome to the Mantic Universe Podcast. This one is a short episode, and we have a very special guest today, so I'm glad that you're here. If you noticed, I'm not Chris, so he couldn't make it for this episode, but demanded that we keep going. So Mark, Clem, and Felix are all here, and we're going to be going through the Clash of Kings book today and highlighting some of the armies and things like that. So we plan on doing a review for each of the armies, probably in a series of shorts and with different cast members, and hopefully you will enjoy those. So, but we're going to do them all in a MUP style. All right. So also Countercharge is going to be doing some episodes reviewing the book, so you can check those out as well. And just a reminder, if you go up over to the Mantic web store, 15% discount on your whole order, one time only, once per customer, but just type in Universe 15. And so fill your basket up. And then, of course, we got to give a shout out to our friends at Baron of Dice. They are great. I will be using some of them later today. Colin and I have a 10mm Kings of War battle set up on the gaming table, so we're hoping to squeeze that in tonight, and that should be great. All right, and then I mentioned a special guest, and we do have a special guest with us tonight, Felix Castro. How you doing tonight, Felix?
I'm doing all right. How is everyone else doing?
Doing all right. So, well, I mean, you've been on Countercharge with me in the Narrative Workshop forever, and you've been guest hosting there, going over a bunch of different content. So why don't we go ahead and introduce you to the MUP audience. So can you give us a little Felix Castro story?
Well, hi, I'm Felix Castro. I'm from, I guess, originally Dayton, Ohio. So I'm a Midwest America person. Been involved in Kings of War and Mantic games since, 2015 was when I played my first demo of Kings of War. And then just sort of have kind of been branching off into a bunch of the other games. Right now, it's still mostly Kings of War. And for the MUP audience that may not know, I'm actually now on the rules committee for Kings of War. One of the many new faces we have on the RC now. But, you know, outside of Kings of War, I also play Dead Zone and Firefight. I've wanted to play Armada, but, you know, I just haven't... there's only so many games, a little time. So, but yeah, that's kind of me. So.
And I remember you kicked my butt once on UB, I think. I don't remember. It was probably for one of the tournaments you played.
Call to Arms. But...
Northern Alliance, is that right? What's your favorite army usually?
Yes.
That's correct.
Normally, when I would have played you, would have been in my Northern Alliance time. Mostly now, it's Halflings. That's the one I've been playing mostly for the past 2 years now. So,
and he's very, very good with them, Clem. So, Colin and I faced off against Felix. And who was your partner? He came from Canada. It was his first tournament, right?
Yeah, it was Christian Moisson.
There you go. I remember he had a giant in his list. So which
he did. He was playing ogres.
Ogres. Okay, that's right. Yeah, those ogres and halflings just completely dismantled us. It was the last game of the team tournament. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you probably should have murdered this horde of siege breakers, but you didn't even waver them. So, yeah.
Well, this you is know, what
Colin sent in a... Well, yeah, well, Colin sent in a horde of Revenant Cav with the Brew of Strength. So you're talking, was it 32 attacks hitting on fours, wounding on fours? I mean, he should have done 8 wounds, but didn't even, like, waver them. And it was just like, okay. So then everything piled in on that horde, and that was his main hammer. You know, once your main hammer is gone, you know, ogres are just going to sort of laugh at what the rest of the things undead can bring to the equation. So, yeah.
Oh, I thought the forest trolls were the real winner. So they
against you. Yeah, that was.
Oh man, it was. I have a whole new fondness and respect for forest trolls. Let me tell you, and the models are great.
Yeah, well, they are the superior trolls. They actually
that's
have
right.
A they normal the waiver gap day. Of 15.7. Yeah, they have a normal waiver gap, unlike most trolls in Kings of War that have a 14.17 nerve at the horde level. forest trolls have a 15-17 nerve, and they have built-in pathfinders. So for, you know, a little more expensive than regular trolls, but you get basically one more. You basically get staying stone and, you know, pathfinder for free. Not free, but, you know, all lumped into one unit. So
definitely worth it. Yeah.
Yes, 100% worth it. I have not done a the one I did for the doubles tournament was a, you know, mostly trolls thing, but I've never tried a 100% trolls list, because you could. You've got, you know, you got the trolls that regular just punch, you got shooting trolls, you've got the troll gunnery sergeants, so I mean, you've got a lot of, I don't know if you want to do a full 2300 point army of it, but, you know, at least at 1000 points I was able to run a fully troll halfling list, which was interesting.
So you tell your opponent it's a halfling list and then you only have trolls. That's the kind of curveball. That's an interesting concept. Yeah, anyway,
it was kind of funny to have that, just to, you know, rock up to say I'm playing halflings and it's just like trolls, trolls, trolls. And I think the only thing I had that wasn't a troll was the Iron Beast, because of that aura with the Pride of the Shires. So,
oh yeah, that Iron Beast was awesome too. So yeah, because didn't you have five guys on it because it had five shots or something like that? So
I gave them some rifles because they do have five shots, but rather than, because I don't like the short order pizzeria setup they have with the normal model. So I just had a friend of mine 3D print a howdah, and I put halfling rifles in the howdah so to kind of represent the five shots.
Very, very cool. All right. Well, Felix, we're really glad that you could join us today as we go through a Clash of Kings 24 army review. We're just going to pop around a bit here, and we're not going to read it item by item and go through the entire book. That's not what we're going to do today. So, but as an intro and an overview, so Clem, I see a little note on here. What even is a cockbook? Where does that come from?
Yeah, I mean, it was just, I thought it would be interesting to have a quick chat about it. So it's the yearly update of rules, as the veterans already know. And its purpose is to balance everything, like adjust points, adjust a few values, and also add new rules. And as you've probably heard by now, the paper book will ship on the 6th of November, I believe, and will be also updated like in the companion soon. And usually it's available as a PDF as well. Yeah, last year we did not get a Clash of King update. We got the big compendium instead, with even more changes, I think. Although this year there have been pretty major changes as well, in particular to Nightstalkers and Northern Alliance. Last spring we got a bunch of new rules and updates alongside the new model releases. And yeah, and also the Twilightkin have the rules printed in this book. So yeah, and Mark, you said the Clash of King books wasn't always like every year released, like since the first edition of Kings of War, right?
Yeah, I thought, yes, I believe it came along with second edition, and I believe 2018 was the first Clash of Kings book. Do you remember, Felix?
I think 2017 was the first one.
2017, yeah, because the 2018 has the Countercharge Army in a Weekend in it and things like that. But I thought that Nick Williams had an article in there that talked about how to make your own units with points and things like that. Mm-hmm. But
because I was just getting into Kings of War in the 2016 time frame, and so there was very little time between me getting hardcore into Kings of War and then the, because remember that Clash 17 had the, you know, you can't fly when you're disordered, you know, trying to think of all the other, that was a really impactful rule, you know, because I remember it only happened once or twice, the whole, like, you know, you hit a Wraith troop and you're like, cool, then they fly behind you, spin around 180 and get surge into your rear, now you got 30 attacks, you know, on fours of crushing one, and just punishing because you can do anything about it. So
sounds fun.
So that 2017 Clash put the whole, like, okay, if you're disordered, you can't fly anymore. And that really sort of prevented that, you know. So that kind of tamped down the surge shenanigans stuff because you couldn't fly anymore. So Yes, I'd like to say it was 2017 was the very first Clash of Kings, but you're right, though. I think, especially with newer people coming in, it's nice to actually go back and define some of these things.
Yeah, but, I mean...
it is just Clash of Kings, and the Brits love their assault on their own English language, so, you know, Clash of Kings, C-O-K, becomes cock, and so you talk about a cock pack and stuff like that, and a lot of people were like, huh? You know, newer players just kind of scratch their heads like, what is this? Why are they talking about this? Is this appropriate?
A little bit, but that's life.
Well, that's why we started calling it the annual update. Remember, Felix? We had that over on Counter Charge. Yeah. I forget who was really grinding hard on not saying cock anymore, but, you know, it was pretty funny. So we decided to go with annual update.
Right.
I mean, I love the, for me, it's kind of a defining feature of Kings of War that you get a book once a year that updates everything all at once. I think it makes things super fair for everyone. And it also, it's not like a new release every 3 months and then you need to rethink everything every 3 months or buy the latest book every 3 months or even shorter time frames. And so for me, it's really a big feature of the game. Obviously, there's something to be found to still allow for new model releases the whole year round, like we've seen for the Night Stalkers and the Northern Alliance. But yeah, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think... I do love that aspect of it, that only, you know, everything gets updated and kind of level set once a year, you know, versus the other company's model of, you know, I think what was the joke that when, at least for Warhammer 40K, when the Imperial Guard will get their new updates, like it's time for a new edition, because they would just take, you know, they would get updated at the end of the edition, they want to get updated again until the end of the next edition. And so that can be rough on certain armies to have nothing. So at least with the you know, with the Clash of Kings, the annual update, like you'll get something. Everyone gets something at the end of the year, and yeah, I like it. And I'm kind of interested to see kind of where they're going right now, because you know you can't expect to just not have anything new until the end of the year. Like no company can do that, you know. So they are updating certain things with, you know, the Night Stalkers and the Northern Alliance, but then it'll get level set again. Cause like they've explained, the Northern Alliance and Night Stalkers were balanced versus the last update. So they will get changes in the current update. So, you know, yeah, it'll be interesting. I like it, but you know, I think Magic's still sort of figuring out what's the good balance. What's the good timeline to, you know, to do these updates.
Mark? Oh yeah, I love the annual update. I think it's a lot of fun. I think of it more as like a golf season or something like that, or it's a season. And here in the U.S., it's more timed up with the Masters, right, Felix? So
it was. Now
it
the Masters
was, and then it moved around
July. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it had to do with the UK Clash of Kings. You know, being at the end of the year, or you know, and even that got moved up. So, yeah, it's the thing has been the needle has been kind of moving on. Is like when you know when is a good time for these things to get published. So,
right now, as part of the RC, are you guys involved obviously with these releases that happened prior to the Clash coming out, the Clash book?
You mean like the Night Stalkers and the Northern Alliance ones? Or?
Well, I'm assuming that the same thing's going to happen with the Trident Realms and the Abyss. So,
right. So, obviously we don't do any of the timelines for that. That is 100% a Mantic thing. But we are told, like, hey, we need these rules updates by this time. We need, you know, we need these things. I think actually, if it's Methuselah, it's with a zero at the end. That's Matt Carmack's Twitch channel, but I think he's put his stuff out on YouTube. He actually explains kind of this is the development cycle of stuff that we get from the RC. So like I said, we will get notified like, hey, you know, we're going to be doing an update for this line, and we'll be kind of told. And actually, we don't. we've got a fairly open hand on stuff. Like, they didn't tell us, hey, you need to do this, you need this, you need to do this. They just said, hey, here's some models that we've got in the pipeline that we're developing. You know, make up rules for these. Like, for example, the Tormentors, as they're called. You know, they're, hey, we're going to do, we want to do something like a flying type unit. So we kind of come up with those rules, and then, you know, that gets talked amongst us, and then we kind of get the kind of the okay, thumbs up, thumbs down from Mantic saying, yeah, that looks good. But yeah, so we're kind of at the behest of what Mantic wants to do, but we are involved in that development and kind of the rules and stuff like that. So it's kind of interesting. And I think we're starting to get our legs underneath us, because when the Night Stalkers came out, so the new RC came in to play in January of 23. So, and remember, the Night Stalkers came out, what, June? May?
Something like that, yes.
Yeah, so I mean, we only had about 4 months on station before we were being told, hey, you need to submit the rules for these Night Stalker updates. And then...
So the timeline is, yeah, they will tell you, hey, we have these new models, please come up with rules, and then there's some back and forth, then you guys do some playtesting, I guess, online on Ubi, something like that, and then, so within a few months, you refine all of this, and then give it to Mantic so that they can print it, or how does that work?
Yeah, that's kind of basically how it is. We kind of get the initial, you know, ideas tossed around for stuff, and after we kind of get more solidified on what we want to submit, we submit it to the playtest group. So our playtest group, I don't even know how many we have in here in the playtest group, but we've kind of expanded. So for the RC, you know, it's three Americans, three Brits, and an Australian, right? But there's more than those three countries that play. So we've made a concerted effort to add other countries into the playtest group. We've got Spaniards, we've got Argentinians, we've got folks from Singapore, you know, to kind of playtest stuff, because they are different metas.
I wonder who that could
acknowledge. Yeah, exactly. You know, we acknowledge there are different metas, there are different ways of playing the game. And so something that, you know, like, for example, shooting is not that big of a deal in the UK. You don't see as many. But then, hell, half the United States don't see shooting that much of a problem. But then the Southeast, you know, they live under the shade of arrows. So, like, there's just different ways of playing the game. So we tried to get as many people into those playtest group to be able to, you know, fully stretch the rules out to an extent. So, you know, when people are saying, well, this looks busted, it's like, well, you know, people have been from across the world have been playing, you know, these lists, so might not be as busted as you think at first glance. So, but that's how that goes. You know, we get the marching orders from Mantic. We start developing the rules, and then we send to the playtest group. Playtest group plays it for a while. We get and so one thing we did change with the way that stuff goes to the RC is we will first give them an initial look at stuff for the playtest group. We'll say, hey, what's your gut reaction on this stuff? You know, what. Looking at this, what do you say? What do you think? Does this look too bad, too busted? And if some people say, yeah, it looks really busted, we'll kind of go back and kind of look to see, you know, just at first glance, is it? You know, and then we might change some stuff. And then we make some adjustments and then finally send out to playtesters to playtest. And then after a couple of weeks, they'll send us their feedback on that. And then we kind of look back. Do we need to change anything? You know, it's the iterative feedback loops that we're doing to try and kind of, you know, kind of keep a tightening of what works and what doesn't work within the playtest. So, because we don't have that much time to playtest. Like, think about it. You know, we were playtesting.
Yeah, it's a tight schedule for sure. Yeah, yeah, from what you described.
Right. We only get two, three months to, you know, develop and playtest these things. And, you know.
Yeah, and also everyone, there's so many of you guys, right? So, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, everyone, we all have jobs, we all have families, we all have other stuff, and it's just like, this is not our job 100%, so we are definitely, you know, but we're trying to get as much bang for the buck with what we're getting, so hence we're having these feedback loops, and we've got, you know, different ways for the feedback from the playtester to get sent back to the RC, and so we can kind of see, you know, what's working, what's not working, and so that's kind of how that works within, and we're still sort of getting underneath our feet underneath us for this, because it is a a new RC. It's a new playtest group. It's a new way of Mantic handling these things. So we're just...
it's interesting to see how it's structured. I mean, I think the Firefight Rule Committee also, they have like a Google form or something if people want to submit feedback. And mm-hmm. I suppose they also keep an eye on lists and so on. So do you guys also, throughout the year, like check out the lists from various events or also check on Fanatics? What's the impression from the whole community? Like, do you also take this type of wider feedback, like not just from playtesting, obviously, but also from players? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, we do get feedback from players with, or at least from the playtest group within the same like Google Forms kind of thing. Then we're all on Fanatics. You know, we all kind of see what chatter's bubbling up. I think the big impetus that we had, at least within the newer RC, or to have people that are, you know, involved in the community, may not necessarily, you know, I'm not tearing it up on the tournament scene, I'll tell you that, but I go to a lot of tournaments, you know, so I at least kind of see, at least in the Southeast United States, I think I went two or three different GTs within the Southeast. I go to the Midwest tournaments, you know, I do a bunch of other stuff, so.
That's interesting. No, thanks.
Oh yeah, Felix was a great choice for the RC. Absolutely. I mean, he goes to a lot of tournaments and he's around and he knows. He's always talking lists and things like that and holding court on, so to speak, on After Dark. So yeah, I mean, I was very happy.
Yeah, After Dark's kind of a sneaky. If folks really want to get their feedback into RC, because there's more often than not, there's probably at least one or two of us from the RC in the chats for After Dark. So we'll plug for that if you guys want to get your suggestions in.
And I mean, I think the whole gaming community is very thankful to you guys for all the hard work you input into coming up with these books every year and trying to give us the best game possible. And so, yeah, I think it's, as I said earlier, for me, it's really a defining element of Kings of War that Mantic is smart enough to give power to its player to maintain the game to its best level. And then the rule committee and the playtesters, they do a lot of work to come up with a yearly book so that all of us players can enjoy up-to-date and fresh game. So thanks again. All right. Should we move on to our general impression for this book, Mark? What did you get out of the book? What's your general impression?
Well, I loved the Twilight Kin lore. I thought it was fantastic. I talked about it on our last main episode. Overall, I think it's a really solid Clash book. So they introduced some new spice into the game as usual, and it'll take some time to see how it'll play out in the tournament scene. But, you know, and then the basement scene, you're just going to be having fun with it. But I really like some of the rules that they changed. You know, like I can't wait to try out Ordered March, for instance, with the dwarves. And, you know, especially the Abyssal dwarves got it. So with my two-player starter set is on its way from England right now, so I can't wait. And so I'm going to build a new Abyssal Dwarf army and try out that Ordered March. I think that's going to be exciting. I know you're not excited about Titans going to unit strength 2, but...
Yeah, that's not my favorite thing. I need to try it out and see. But overall, I think it's a very solid book as well. I like that every single army, well, except the Ratkin Slaves, has some touches here and there. And the first impression is like, oh, it doesn't look so big, like change wise. But when you look a bit closer, quite a few things actually changed, but it's small changes. It's not like a big revolution, like turning everything upside down. And so it's really just building on top of a pretty good game. Like the game was a pretty good state and it's slightly better. And also there's some spice, as you mentioned, like a few new things. Also love that there are new scenarios and new ways to play the game because of those. So yeah, overall I would say mission accomplished. And Felix, so if I understand correctly, that's the first Clash of King book that you actually participate in creating, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
So can you tell us about your impression and how proud of a father are you of this book?
I mean, it's it's funny though, because you know, a lot of the stuff that we did work on, I am a bit of a proud papa. There's actually quite a chunky Clash of Kings book. There is a lot of updates in it. Like, I'm not entirely certain if people are. It might take some time for people to realize just the extent of the changes that we've got going on within this one. I mean, the rules, you know, we're hoping the rules changes, because a lot of things did change from little things. Like I mentioned earlier about that whole disorder, you can't fly anymore. Like, that changed the game a lot. The moving to unit strength versus points cost for some of these scenarios, that changed a lot. It was a little change, but it changed the game a lot. So we'll see how these go. A couple of the changes, looking at the list that you guys are going. And one of the things we are getting rid of in Clash of Kings is Botshot. That rule's going away because, well, we looked at it and there's not that many units that actually have it. Like, we actually went through every army and realized, like, maybe 15 units in the entire game have pot shots. So we're like, why are we wasting words on this when it simply is just not taken all that often? So
it also makes sense, I suppose, like, because my impression, and that's not backed by looking exhaustively at all the lists, is a lot of the shooters either have pot shots or steady aim. And it's kind of like, well, maybe if you don't have steady aim and you don't have pot shot, you just get the -1 to shoot if you move, well, maybe that's good enough, right? And you don't need the additional rule. So.
Right. But like I said, and it wasn't so much that. I mean, I like you're thinking on that one, but it wasn't so much that. It's just the fact that there was so few that even had pot shot. You're like, why are we wasting the time when it's just like there's just so few things that even are affected by the rule. So it's like, you know, if there was a more, you know, maybe if half the shooters in the game had pot shot, it'd be one thing, but they simply don't, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
There you go. Was pot shot meant to replace reload, and then we just kind of got rid of that altogether then?
If I remember, well, that was obviously before I showed up. I think it was to sort of offset the amount of people and things that had reload. Because that is a very restrictive, you know, thing to, you know.
Ask any dwarf player.
Yeah, can't do both. So I think that was the intent. Obviously I wasn't involved in that one, but I think that was the intent. But yeah, I think it just wasn't, I don't know. It didn't hit the mark really. So I think that's why we were like figuring we needed to get rid of it. So, but
I like it. I like changes. It too. You guys don't just add new stuff on top of a pile of things and sometimes also remove things. Just to keep it the best game that it can be. So I think that's actually very important that you guys also have the liberty to remove things when they're not needed anymore. You want to do something different.
Yeah, that's one thing that we are cognizant, and people have said this on Fanatics, that they are concerned with just too many rules. We in the RC are aware of that. We're trying to figure out where we can pare down rules, you know, as possible, and Potch, that's one of them. So
yeah, I mean, we also mentioned it like in the previous episode very quickly, the how's it called, redeploy, I think now it's like now a generic rule, like a keyword rule. It's right. Just a few units had something similar with slightly different wordings, and so because that's something that you guys want to use actually in profile, instead of having unique rules on some entries and phrase slightly differently for basically the same thing, well, then you create a new rule, and it's easier to manage. I also like this. I think it's a good way to go about with rules.
Yeah, that was like what was it? The they shall feel no pain from Warhammer 40K. There was like a whole bunch of different iterations, essentially the same rule, which is all known.
They tried to do this, for I think the latest edition, because basically every single new book had variations of the same thing. But then it's a nightmare, right? Because the wording is slightly different in every single book, not really by intention, but sometimes just by neglect or, hey, we didn't have time.
Right.
And then if you FAQ one thing somewhere, you might forget to FAQ it somewhere else. And it just becomes completely impossible to manage. And so it's good that Kings of War doesn't fall in, right. in this pitfall.
This is Ronnie Renton, and you are listening to the Mantic Universe podcast.
Agreed. All right.
Should we go more into the book itself now? I think instead of going page by page, which would take forever and be a bit
boring. Page one.
Yes. And also, I think we have better things to do, right? I think it's better if we just go through some personal highlights from the book, like especially. Speaking for myself, I don't know every single army so well, so I could read out every single page. That's really not an option. But also, I couldn't even comment too much on elves, for example, because I don't play elves and I don't know them.
You're
so
you're a good man.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's how we will do it. The first thing I see in the book is what I would call the newer Mantic armies. So the Night Stalkers, the Northern Alliance, and obviously the Twilight Kin. I think it's very interesting to look at these lists because they're a good indication of what a Mantified army looks like, if I may say so. And I find it's pretty well done how these armies do have some unique flavor. They don't have too many unique rules or like too many gotchas if you've never played against them. But there are a few things that are uniquely Northern Alliance or uniquely Twilight Kin. And I'm looking forward to having this type of treatment also applied to all of the other armies. You can see a little bit of that for most of the other factions. With the addition of like small auras and synergies in armies. So, for example, now the army standard banner now has an aura of whatever. I think in the dwarf they have an aura of rally. No, it's not an aura of rally. Rally. In one other army, it's headstrong. In another army, it's rampage 3, something like this. And so, yeah, for the armies that didn't get the deep treatment of Mantifying, there's still already a few things in this book. But again, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys tackle every army and settle them in Panithorin with their own special rules a bit more. I think that's an interesting approach to the game. And Felix, you said also, so Mantic tells you, here are the models that we are working on for the next faction or something like this. But they don't really tell you, hey, we want the Northern Alliance to have a special rule that is frozen or whatever. Or I have another thing where you get vicious against frozen units or something. That's something that comes from the RC, right?
Right. So, yeah. So we were told, hey, here's, because I know Ronnie had been broadcasting that one for years about the whole dwarves on Raven, so we were like, cool, we're gonna have that. Then we were told that we were gonna get new Icekin Hunter and half of Berserker Sculpts, because I think that's basically it for the newer models for the Northern Alliance off the top of my head.
Correct.
But I think for us, because so obviously with 28, soon to be 29 armies, there's not enough for one person per army, or even a couple of people per army. So there's usually about three or four of us per army spread out over. Northern Alliance is one of ours, and I think one of the ones that the folks that were working on Northern Alliance, because of the short timeline of Night Stalkers, about half the RC was working hard on Night Stalkers, and the other half started working on Northern Alliance. But quickly, early on, we were like, we need to make Frozen worth having. Because for the most part, it really wasn't, because Northern Alliance is a slower army. A lot of your units, except for maybe the half-elf berserkers and some of your cavalry, like the Frostfangs, are speed 5. And with Frozen knocking you down by one movement, it's like, oh, wow, the speed 6s are still going down to 5 and so matching us. Oh, the speed 7 still can outcharge us. The speed 8s still outcharge us. And so we were like, we need to make Frozen more worth having. So I don't even know who it was that came up with the, you know, let's give them, you know, something else to work, interact with Frozen. So someone had come up with the, what is now the Tundra Fighters, which gives that unit, you know, Vicious versus Frozen. But then we were like, well, we have to figure out how Frozen gets applied, because the way it was working, it was only a shooting attack, you know, either through Icy Breath or Blizzard or whatever. And so we were like, well, that's not going to work out. So we eventually, you know, came up with the way now they have, like, the Chilling Presence that, like, Krim, the Ice Elementals, and certain other things have. And then, you know, making Clarion have his thing, he just, like, nominating within, I think it's 6 or 9 inches. I think it's 9. This is like, okay, you're Frozen now. And so to give a lot more units the Frozen condition, that way these Tundra Fighters can take advantage of it. So that's, that was something that sort of naturally within the discussions within the RC kind of came up.
That's interesting. I mean, as I said, I really like that now Northern Alliance can do things that are very specific to Northern Alliance. And I think there was kind of also criticism to some of the Kings of Our Armies at some point. That's something I've heard, maybe just in the local gaming group. Oh, yeah, you can do any build with any army, like all armies have cavalry, all armies have a dragon, all armies have spellcasters. This type of stuff. And now I think it's less and less the case. And I like it. Like the Twilight King, for example, there are big holes in what they can do. They don't have cavalry, although they have something that is sort of similar to cavalry. They can't really do cheap spam, I don't think. They don't really have shooting, right? It's very limited how much shooting you can field with this army. And then they have other kind of unique features. And so now I feel like when you build a Twilight King army, it's not like, oh, you must build him this one way. That's the only way that works. Not at all. But you are kind of offered unique opportunities, but also constraints that you can't just do like Alpha Strike Elites cavalry or flying spam or whatever with every single army. And I think that's a good direction to go to.
Yeah, I think kind of in our, it's not written down anywhere, but I think in our kind of our philosophy, we kind of want each army to have at least 2 to 3 like viable builds, you know, because, yeah, I don't want, you know, necessarily a Cav Twilight Kin list or, you know, a trash, you know, spam, you know, Twilight Kin list. I want them to have certain types of lists and allow to give that certain flavor in list building. To, again, not have just, well, you kind of can only play this one type of list, and that's the only way you get to work. So, like I said, we were trying to get, you know, maybe 2 or 3 different list build types within every army. So, yeah, kind of as we manticify, make that a term now, an army, we want to be able to have those sorts of list building options within a list.
That's pretty cool. All right, then on the highlights that I have, well, I think I'll start with the faction that I've been playing this season, and that's the Salamanders. And they got actually quite a few interesting boosts. And one thing I really like in the book is that there's a new rule now that is called Fireborn, and it's a special rule just for Salamanders and Inferno keyword. And the way it works is basically everything that is on fire gets the Inferno keyword, and all of the lizards get the Fireborn special rule. And that special rule gives you Life Leech +1 for each Inferno unit within 6 inches or something like this. And I think that's a pretty cool, it's a pretty cool combo. Kenya pushes you to have both of these type of units in your list. Lean more into what is more unique about Mantic Salamanders compared to Lizardmen, let's say. And I like it. I mean, for my list, it's a pretty big impact because I do have a lot of fire things and some lizards. So it'll be pretty neat. I think that there are obviously other changes to Salamanders. The Scorch Rings got slightly more expensive, as we mentioned. I think the Army Standard Bearer has a Wild Charge aura option or something like this. Like, obviously, I'm not going line per line on the army and, hey, this is all of the changes. So don't worry, Salamander players. There are more things in the book than what I just said. But
there's an entire page of changes to the Salamanders.
Right, they do get a bunch of changes,
and that's without graphics. So it's literally from top to bottom, a full page of changes. So
right, yeah. No, that's true. There's quite a lot going on. Makes me happy. I liked it. The other army that I played or used to play at least is the Forces of the Abyss. So we all know that it's an army that will get some redo mid-24, I believe, because the Trident Realm comes first. We don't know exactly when they come, but I guess relatively early in the year. And so I think Ronnie already mentioned that Forces of the Abyss didn't get too much changes in this book, because obviously they will be revamped later in 24. But still, quite a few units got cheaper already now, the Force of the Abyss. And yeah, I was surprised, because I thought this army was already in a pretty good position. And so now a few core units are cheaper. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what you guys do with them. I'm looking forward to the new models and the new rules. And
we definitely had to pull back quite a number of changes that we were going to put in for Clash, and then we're like, oh, they're getting updated next year. Okay, let's. So we're already starting to work on some of those things, you know, mm-hmm. with regards to what Forces of Abyss will look like in 24. But you know, I had to pull that back because you don't want to open the kimono too early and reveal everything early on. You know, so we had to pull back quite a bit of stuff.
I see.
Although circling back to what you're saying about the flag guys, the banner guys. That was one thing I was advocating before I even joined the RC, was make banner guys great again. So that's one thing I'm excited about, if we're going to dovetail into that, like just giving reasons to take banners, because like what thing took more of a casualty from the general inspiring rule than banner guys? Like,
I agree. I think it's
like overnight, like nobody.
Yeah, they became absolutely worthless.
Right, so they just came just overnight, just, you know, like a Thanos snap, like banner guys disappeared. So that was even before I joined the RC. I was like, we need to make banner guys great again. And so I'm hoping this at least does a little bit to at least make people do the question of,
Oh, definitely, like from the book.
Do take a banner guy.
Quite a few of these banner guys will come back to lists. So that's a certainty. And I think you guys can push it even further. But it's already a pretty good start in that direction. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, so I think, because if I remember correctly, I mean, I haven't looked at every single one, but I'm pretty certain all the banner guys go from just inspiring to very inspiring. So that gives you another, like, very inspiring, you know, bubble that you have that you wouldn't have. And then, like you mentioned earlier, they're all going to get an aura of some sort. So I guess the best way you guys could describe it was the Skald for Northern Alliance. That's a good preview if you kind of see what he has. He's got very inspiring. He's got the Aura Ordered March. So, you know, for Northern Alliance, that's kind of, you know, gives people a little bit of a hint. So your banner guys in your list will have very inspiring and then an aura of something that applies to, you know, your army.
Yeah, and it's something that your army definitely wants in general, right? Like, right. It's really something that's, as I said, you will see a lot more of those banner guys on the battlefields in 24. I'm certain of it.
I hope so. And then what was the one that I was just like, I had to fight for, but I was like, man, this is really cool because it's somewhat thematic, was Order of the Brother Mark. Their banner guy, if I remember correctly, I believe he has Life Leech 1, plus 1 for him. I'm like, cause for me, the theme in my head is that, like, the Order of the Brother Mark, they fight the Abyss. Like, they're the buffer state between Basileia and the Abyss, and they just fight the Abyss all the time. And in my head canon, like, they're almost too familiar with the forces of the Abyss, hence they get the Life Leech, because I don't think there's too many good armies that get Life Leech. you know. So
yeah, that's interesting. I think the Kingdoms of Men also get the Life Leech, and when you first see it, it's like, well, that sounds weird. It's just then maybe the rule could have its name changed. But then, yeah, it sort of makes sense also from a rules perspective that these armies would also get Life Leech. But yeah, no, it's funny when you see them with this evil keyword, or evil special rule almost.
Yeah, but like I said, for me, for thematically, it was just like, for me, the Order of the Brother Mark, they just spend too much time fighting the Abyss, so they've kind of, I wouldn't say been corrupted, but, you know, they've kind of, I guess in a way, they have been corrupted sort of by fighting the Abyss. They still maintain, you know, they're good to neutral alignment, but you know, they just a little bit of hints there of like, oh, they're perhaps a little too familiar with their enemy at this point. So,
all right, yeah, and then when I look at the book again, thinking about which armies I'm a bit more familiar with, or at least which armies I play, when I look at undeads, well, a few things changed. Like some spearmen, I think, got cheaper. The big unique bad guy is also now slightly better. A few things here and there. But I want to see more skeleton and more themes for the army, I think. But so it's interesting, but I want to see even more crazy stuff for undeads next time. That's my the first impression or my highlights from undeads. Like the werewolves got cheaper as well. That's pretty cool.
So a lot for the spearmen and stuff like that, and this again, since we're touching on universal changes, phalanx is just getting cheaper across the board, so every unit that's got phalanx is getting somewhat cheaper in Clash 24. Reasoning is because and Mark will remember this, back in first or second edition, if the units had phalanx, they usually had more attacks, right? And so they're costed as having those extra attacks. Well, a lot of those phalanx units lost those extra attacks, but stayed the same price. So they have the same price of having phalanx without having the benefit of extra attacks. So they're scaling back. That's why the skeleton spearmen got cheaper. And then we've sort of figured that the large infantry nimble units that don't fly are a bit overcosted as well. Hence the werewolves getting cheaper. And so if you kind of do the math, you've also got was it the Fallen from Varanger? I'm trying to think.
That's right. Ones that are similar. There's another unit similar. I can't remember it now, but yeah, I've seen it.
Lycans from the Herd. So a lot of those like large infantry nimble units just they don't see play all that often, you know. At least the non-flying ones, you know. So we're trying to incentivize folks to maybe go, oh, well, maybe I do pick a werewolf horde or, you know, regiment or something.
I mean, I do pick them because I think they're cool. And also in the in-debt list, I think they're interesting, although not the most typical build you can find. But yeah, no, it's nice to see them a bit cheaper. And then the next army that I was looking at, but it was more going through pages, is the dwarves and free dwarves. They also got a bunch of changes. Obviously, they got the new Stoneclaw riders, so the dwarves on the big bird that we saw with the Northern Alliance. They now exist within the free dwarves, and maybe also the normal dwarves. I don't remember. Felix, do you know?
No, they are not. They are not the normal dwarves.
Right, they're just in the free dwarves. And Ordered March also, so getting one more pivot when you go at the double. I think that will be pretty interesting for all of the dwarves as well. So if you're a dwarf player, this book is good news for you, I think.
Oh, there's a lot of changes for the dwarves. I mean, really, there are. So, you know, compared to some of the other armies, you know, they didn't get much. But, boy, the dwarves got a bevy of rules. So I'm very excited to pull my dwarf army out.
Yeah, a lot of that was, again, removing, like, Potshot, because that was in the rifles, I think.
The crossbows and the rifles probably
right.
Had a pot shot.
So they removed the pot shot and stuff like that, getting the ordered march. The bull workers getting a little bit cheaper because of the phalanx recosting. And they talk about this in the countercharge episode on scenarios, but the secured position rule, a lot of that happens to do with dwarf war engines, which to to explain to the folks that, you know, for your listeners of your show, that may not necessarily listen to Countercharge. If not, I don't know why. But, you know, hey,
you guys so
the position is basically is for a war engine, if it counts as it's a unit strength zero scoring unit. So if you're talking about, say, in control and stuff like that, if there's no one in that corner, but there's a dwarven cannon there, well, then all of a sudden you own that sextant, you know, that little sixth of the board. Now, granted, literally anything with unit strength can fly in and take it from them, but, you know,
it could still make a difference, there. Right? Yeah, no, it's a small boost to the war engine type of units that gets this. They can also obviously carry tokens now that they're scoring units.
Now that they're scoring, they can.
Not so sure if that would come into play so often, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you want to, because, you know, they still get tripled on by anything. So, like, you know, chances are you give them
desperate times call for desperate measures, but yeah.
Yeah, but if you want to really put a target on a gun crew's back, give them the token, and then anything with, you know, 7 or 8 attacks, like, cool, we're rolling 23. But you're right, desperate times do call for desperate measures, and so, you never know. But yeah, just a lot of different rules for the free dwarves and dwarves. I think they'll benefit from it, but we'll see.
So what are you guys' highlights? Like, obviously, I haven't looked too much into the elves, because as I mentioned, I don't know too many reference points for them. So what's the highlight for the device type of elves, for example?
You talking about for what the elves get in terms of...
Yeah, like what if you're an elf player, what do you get with this book? Like, what's your highlight or the impression from it? I don't know. I just feel bad because I haven't looked at the elves so much, and I suppose some people will get frustrated. So if you can give them some biscuits, okay?
Don't. They play elves. They don't need any more help.
I was trying to be charitable, but you're right.
I'm not. I know there's. We're working on some changes to chariots, so I think the elfin the war chariots are getting a little, I think, a points decrease. I don't know if
I think you're right. No, I think you're right now. Because I saw.
But they're getting what they're doing is they're getting a points decrease. We're getting the option to buy bows, so they're not just getting the bows standard. I think it's basically they would cost the same if they buy the bows, but getting the option to, like, not, you know, to not have the bows and have a cheaper.
Similar to the spellcasters, then. I think it's an interesting change as well. I like having the option to take the. I think also some units that have like a shooting attack now, it's an optional shooting attack. I think the herd also had something similar. Some units with Thunder's Charge 1, now they cost a bit less, but you have an option to upgrade them to get the Thunder's Charge 1. So, yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm just looking through quickly.
Yeah, I noticed that they removed the Shield Watch from the list. So I'm assuming that there's a logic behind that. Hmm. Nobody took them?
I mean, that could be. I don't know off the top of my head. Because, that wasn't one of the armies I was working on. Could be. It could be that also they're filling a similar role to something else. So, yeah, I don't know.
Very cool. So which ones did you work on? And then we can kind of focus on those.
So Halflings, Northern Alliance, Forces of the Abyss, did Basileans as well. But by working on them, it was like, you know, kind of doing what you're saying, like, you know, recosting the things, doing, you know, figuring out stuff like that. Yeah, because like I said, we get these generic rule universal changes, and now you're just recosting and repricing and stuff like that. So, but yeah, those are the ones I kind of worked on. So,
well, let me toss this out to you too. The other thing is spellcasters got cheaper, and then they can add spells and things like that. I don't know, customize them a bit, or, you know, make them cheaper if you got some extra points. You know, that's the thing I noticed through the book was. Wow, I might be able to squeeze that dude in and, you know, stuff like that. Because I play 500 points all the time. So low-costed people are great. Like the Stone Priest is like 50 points now, you know, instead of 90. And then you can customize them as you go. So what was the thought behind that?
Well, thought behind that was we didn't want to necessarily leave people saddled, paying for parts of a wizard or a spellcaster that they didn't want. For example, the Ice Queens from Northern Alliance, they have Icy Breath. It's just like, well, I wasn't picking Icy Breath. You know, I was always wanting to have something different on my, on my Ice Queens versus Icy Breath, Blizzard or whatever, Surge. So at least now you're not spending as much to get that. Now, granted, you can get some different cheap casters, but you're right. There are different spells that people just didn't like getting saddled with. So to give more flexibility within the spellcaster, gearing up or spell selections. So that was kind of the thoughts behind that.
Well, I love it. So I just thought that was a really, really cool thing. So definitely. There you go. The other thing I noticed is, like, the dwarves got tons of changes, and then the herd and Order of Green Lady, they got like a quarter of a page of changes each. So I guess their army was just fairly well balanced against everybody else at the time and just needed a little tweak.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the best way to say that. And another thing, too, and this is at least from here on, we'll be going out, is basically we were told if Mantic doesn't make a model for it, do not make rules for them. So at least with regards to what we are told, like I say, we're not told a whole lot of things, but we are told if Mantic doesn't make a model for it, do not make rules for it. So
ultimately, that makes sense. That makes sense. I mean, I think we want to have, in a way, well-balanced armies, but also it's kind of frustrating when I think about the Salamanders, for example. There are so many entries in the Salamanders that I just can't take if I want to have a Mantic army.
Right.
And it's like, well, okay. I mean, and I'm all for getting more sprues for Salamanders. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm happy with having more entries, but then I want the models that come with it. So, obviously, I don't want to go into the stupid, the other big company doing this to a fanatic level. But it also makes sense to focus on what is actually playable and what actually has models.
Right. But yeah, there is not, compared to what we said about the dwarves, where dwarves had an entire page without graphics, both the herd nor the green lady get half a page, and that is with graphics. So really, they get a quarter of a page.
That's what I said. Yeah, they just get a little. I mean, the Order of the Green Lady had three changes. So Order of the Thorn changed. The Devoted, of course, went down in points. And then you can add back the heal 3 for 20 points. And they removed the one heal with Icy Breath, I think, for free. I think they got removed. And then they had something for the Exemplar Adjutant. And that's it. Just those three changes. So, and the Rankin Slaves, they got none. So they must be perfect. So
that's just chef's kiss. Just don't even worry about them.
Mark Cunningham can rejoice. So very, very, very good. So, well, then also kind of it's interesting. I don't know if you heard our speculation or not, Felix, on from what Ronnie told us over at Clash of Kings about the new Third Army coming out next year. So my guess was heard. So we'll see what happens in the future here. So,
right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It can obviously not say anything if he even knows something. But
I understand. He's NDA'd, we were trying to also guess,
Which army didn't get that many changes. So that means obviously they're already thinking about redoing it in the year. But I don't really have a very good prediction based on that parameter. I still think that the Forces of Nature and Herd is a good candidate, like something similar like this. But yeah, because for example, I think the Forces of Nature doesn't have a Standard Bearer aura or specific synergy kind of thing. So I don't know. Just saying, maybe there's something hidden somewhere there. And Felix, you can nod or just not say anything. And we'll move on.
I will say that is all at the whims of good old Ronnie Rent. I could tell you stuff, but then he could show up to a meeting on Monday and be like, nope, we're doing this. Because apparently I think dwarves are supposed to be the ones that are supposed to get the big redo this year. But then that changed with Twilight King getting slotted in instead. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah, why not? I mean, it's interesting to do, like, follow the creative juices, you know? I can't blame you.
Trust me, it keeps us on our toes as well.
That's also,
what are we doing now? Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's a good way to keep you alive and listening if the plan changes every now and then. So yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, reading the tea leaves in the book, you know, we know Trident Realm's getting updated, and they only have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 changes themselves. So in a lot of them, Coral Giant is unit strength 2, and the Kraken is unit strength 2. And that's because the Titans moved up, and the Aqua
Mage. It's kind of
like
automatic changes, yes.
Yeah, it's kind of like default.
Universal changes.
Yeah. So a lot of the changes that you see in here are just the automatic changes from the universal special rules or the universal changes that were made. So, which is kind of interesting. And then, of course, the Aqua Mage, he's down to 60 points and removed Icy Breath 10. And then he's got the ability to get heal for 20 points and then Icy Breath 10 for 30 points. So, and they removed Icy Breath 10 with Surge 8 for free. They removed that. So, very interesting.
Right. They basically removed the automatic spells that they were stuck with regardless, and to remove the cost of that spell, to make the spellcaster cheaper.
So. Oh, yeah. I really... Felix, of all the changes in this book, okay, that's my favorite one. I'll say it. That's my favorite one. Messing with the spellcasters a little bit, just making them cheaper and let them buy stuff. You know, that just gives them a little more flavor, customization, and with characters, unless you have a ton of unlocks, you're not going to be spamming them like crazy. So very interesting. And for low point games, they'll be able to squeeze them in easier. So,
I realized I forgot to talk about another one of the armies that I have and I'm interested in is the ogres, and they also got cool options. The main thing is the paymaster, so the guy from Vanguard now does have a profile in the ogres, and a pretty cool one, I might say. It's basically giving a rallying one option for the core ogres infantry. Is that right? That's about
right. Well, so basically everyone but the siege breakers, some of them, they get a mercenary keyword. And so the paymaster gives the rally one to that mercenary keyword.
But the siege breakers do not get the mercenary keyword.
Do not have the mercenary keyword. Correct.
Right. So there is actually a boost to everything else, like the normal warriors, the boomers, the hunters, the shooters. Everyone that you actually want to see more of in an ogre's list, basically, right?
And that was the incentive to basically, make people want to take warriors and stuff like that. Besides because people were taking warriors, they're taking regiments of them for the Lightning Council for that buff. But maybe have them for doing something else rather than just being a battery for the warlocks. So, and the reason for that one was because. To my own horn, but I do have a fairly decent memory when it comes to a lot of models. And so I was like, hey, we have a paymaster model in Vanguard, but there's no rules for it in Kings of War. So,
there's also a matriarch.
There is a matriarch. Yeah. And I fought for that one as well, but didn't make it in.
It's a potential upgrade for warriors, I see. But anyway, there are. Again, a few small changes here and there, but it's cool stuff. I like it.
Absolutely. Yeah, go ahead, Felix.
Nope, go on ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things I was going to bring up here as we're starting to wrap things up is I noticed Jarvis, he went down 40 points, but he also, I guess because he's a special character, he kept all his spells. So, but are we looking to see more? Noble undead armies on the table? Is that
we can't make people take them, but something to incentivize, because you saw that Morgoth also got cheaper as well. It's tough to be an individual non-scoring character right now in Kings of War. and everyone can kind of see that. So how do you find that balance between not absolutely busting the game and actually not being taken? So like, how do you find that fine line? So we're just experimenting with it to try to, you know, kind of reduce the costs on Jarvis and Morgoths and stuff, and actually see if people take that now.
There you go. Well, I will paint up Jarvis. So I've had him sitting on my desk. I've been meaning to paint him a bunch, but I'm working on halflings right now. So I'll get those done, and then I'll put Jarvis up. So
there is a Mantic model for Jarvis, right?
Yes.
There is.
Yep. I have two of them. So
he's got like a little turban and kind of looks vaguely.
I think I got one from Vanguard, like from a promo set. In Vanguard for organizing events, I think. Not 100% sure, but I think that's what it was. Cool. Mark, did you have any other highlights from the book? Like any other armies that you play and something that caught your eye or got you excited about trying it out for this next season?
Well, we talked about the dwarves. Their changes really, really took me. Just because there were so many, and it just... you know, made them faster, and, you know, like the bull workers, and, you know, you could see all the tweaks they did for that. That's the one that really stood out to me, that really got a ton of changes to it. So also the Northern Alliance, you know, for being a new army that just got tweaked, you know, wow, they got a bunch of changes. They got like 2 pages worth of changes. So I thought that was a lot.
I mean, it's just printing out what was already out there, right? For the Northern Alliance.
Partially, yes, but also you got to remember. So both Night Stalkers and Northern Alliance were playtested versus the old Clash, the old rules. So none of their points and all that stuff are really reflected on what is going to be Clash 24. So we had to update them to match with. Because again, we don't want to have, you know, when did the, it was like April, the Night Stalkers came out. We don't want to have 7 months of them being completely out of whack in terms of what they're balanced to, you know. We want to have them balanced towards the previous edition of Clash for the annual update, and then they get updated with the final. So yeah, partially a lot of those entries within the Northern Alliance are just, you know, republishing what came out in, you know, in July for. Yeah, but again, there are also stuff that needs to get updated to the actual. So I think, you know, Krim going to Unit Strength 2, I think, is one of the things.
I didn't compare. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Like, check between the spring updates of the Night Stalkers and Northern Alliance and what is in the actual book. But you're saying, yeah, there are a few things that were readjusted. Oh, that's cool.
Right. Well, because you don't want to have, a Northern Alliance army that's balanced towards the next Clash of Kings update. And so you've got, you know, 5 months of completely, you know.
Yeah, no, obviously, as I said initially, for me, the season aspect, like, okay, this is the Clash of Kings book for this year. And this is what overall the armies can do. I think this is an important feature of the game, and so it's cool to have model releases and maybe some new rules, some new profiles, but then they have to be adjusted as best as you can to the current Clash of Kings book. Yeah, that's a good point.
So that's where a lot of those Northern Alliance changes, and the Night Stalkers to a lesser extent as well, because, again, they were balanced towards the big, you know, what we call the big red book, but the 23 release versus... being balanced towards Clash Kings 24. So
there you go. The other thing I noticed too was some of the formations got removed and then replaced. So is that, yes. It looks a little bit like they're going towards the ambush boxes with content and stuff like that.
I mean, obviously not everything has an ambush box. We can't necessarily do that, but yeah, we'd like to, I think Ronnie had come with the concept of like, you know, make it easier for people to say, hey, buy this box, you get a formation out of it. So it's a very, so yeah, the Northern Alliance one, that is definitely an ambush box with the regiment of Ravens and, you know, 2 troops of Berserkers. I don't think the one for the Night Stalkers was quite that, because we hadn't quite come to that decision yet when the Night Stalkers were coming out. Because again, we'd only been on the job 4 months at that point as an RC, so we weren't really, you know, thinking that yet, but yeah, a lot of those ambush boxes are going to kind of inform what goes into a formation. So
there you go. I noticed it with the Forces of the Abyss as well. So it looks like that's their ambush box. So it was very interesting to see, because all the ambush boxes aren't balanced, but I mean, to a certain extent, you know, I mean, you're usually getting the newer, cooler models and things like that. So by this coming out, I'm going to assume that these models are not getting updated in the new Abyss. You can't tell me, Felix. I get that. But, you know, which is good. So if people want to buy the ambush box, they probably can to put this formation together. But that's another thing that stood out to me in the book.
Yeah. And that was kind of on purpose, was to be like, hey, make it readily available. Just, you know, hey, buy this $45 box and then you can get a formation out of it.
Yeah, in general, I think that part is interesting, but I kind of miss the more fluffy version where lots of the formations where you have this named hero or this right. named regiment and they have a hero with them. And it's kind of like something that anchors a little bit more in Panithor. So right. some parts of it I like, some parts I don't like so much. So let's see. Well, they need to make another intermediate box between the army box, the mega army box, the ambush box. They need to do a formation box or whatever, and throw in a resin hero in there or something like this.
Yeah, just put a resin hero in the ambush box. That solves that problem.
Well, not in the ambush boxes, because those ones you want only plastic and as cheap as possible. That I support. I think it's awesome. But maybe you could give another slightly more expensive box. Who knows? I don't know. They need to figure out a cool option with it. But I hope they don't remove all of the heroes from the formations. Let's see.
All right. Very good. Clem, any other questions? Or, you know, we can go ahead and wrap this up for now. We'll definitely have Felix back. We still have not quizzed him at all on Dead Zone or Firefight. So wow. Felix is a multi-dimensional gamer. So
it's good as we are. So you're absolutely in the right place and more than welcome with us here. No, I mean, I think as we said, initially, we don't really plan to go through every single army in detail. And also personally, I don't feel like talking about stuff that I don't know so much. So yeah, I think I've gone through the armies that I know and the main thing that jumps to my eyes when I was checking the book. So yeah.
There you go. And then, like I said, stay tuned to more shorts. They'll be coming along and we'll have some that are more army specific as they're going along.
And as Chris also said in the last episode, if you guys have some topic or something you want to discuss in a map short, the door is wide open. Just get in touch and we'll try to organize something and talk about the toys that we all love. So yeah,
beautiful. All right, well, I think we're gonna leave it at that today, folks. And so Felix, we don't have an outro, so do you want to take us out with something RC like
yeah. Thanks for everyone listening to the MUP podcast. Thanks for listening, and y'all have a good one.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Well, we didn't want to do that. So,
right.
And we mentioned.
Yep, you're cutting out, Mark.
Yeah, you cut out.
Yeah, no, it's just.
We got our own spin on things.